And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the latest edition of the Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague Stuart Mandel. And Stu, you know what? There was a lot of wild football yesterday. We will get to the wildest game of the day in a little bit. That was Red River, Texas OU overtime shootout. But it felt like there was a lot of Big 12, even in the SEC, going on. What did you make of so much offensive firepower and so much really inept defense?
Well, I think that it's, a lot of people are taking a lot of glee, and understandably so, after all those years of the SEC and making fun of the Big 12 and whatnot. Like, that set of games Saturday was just, the recurring theme was bad defense. LSU's defense, we now know after two examples of this, is embarrassing. Florida's defense got really overlooked the first couple weeks, even though they struggled, and Texas A&M exposed them. But obviously, the real story, the big story, Alabama 63, Ole Miss 48. Lane Kiffin just having his way with the Alabama defense. If not for a bad snap, I mean, really, the only thing that stopped Ole Miss at the end of the, in the fourth quarter was bad snaps. I'm trying to figure out, well, first of all, in terms of the bigger picture, like I think it's a little too simplistic to say, oh, the SEC, they now have bad defenses just like the Big 12. I mean, in Oklahoma, Texas, not many of those guys that you saw on either defense are going to end up being high round draft picks. As bad as Alabama's defense looked, a lot of those guys will, you know, Dylan Moses will still be a high draft pick. So will several of those guys. And that's the difference between those two conferences. But I think it does show you that those 9-6 days were as much a product of Stone Age defense, offenses, bad quarterbacks as anything. This is just college football now. If you have a good quarterback and a good system and a good play caller, I mean, it's hard for anybody to slow it down. And we certainly saw that with LSU last year and how they won the SEC with the offense that they did. And you know, if Alabama's going to win the SEC this year, they're going to have to do it outscoring people because they've got a heck of an offense themselves.
You mentioned the final score, and the final score was a lot. It wasn't indicative of how close that game was. It was just a back-and-forth game that it honestly felt a lot to me like last year's LSU-Texas game, where it was just your turn, and each guy goes back and forth, and that's kind of where it just seems like the defenses can't catch up. Now, obviously, this has been a crazy year already because of the pandemic, and defenses are struggling. They're struggling with tackling. You're seeing tons of missed assignments. When you look at this, I think, and we had this conversation in our green room yesterday afternoon after Florida lost, and I mean, you know, look, I think I was big on the Florida bandwagon this year, and they're the team I was picking to make the playoff and come out of the SEC East. But Texas A&M was 12 of 15 on third downs. I mean, this is – Kellen Mond's played a lot of football, but the skill guys around him are still pretty young. And Todd Grantham's defense just got absolutely shredded. And so we were talking – I was talking to Leinert mostly and Brady Quinn about this yesterday, and it was like, you know, basically you can feel confident about Alabama for the most part, about the team itself, but there's nobody in the SEC where you're looking at and going, oh, man, they're just going to shut people down. I mean, Georgia looks good.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Yeah, Georgia looks good, but I mean, what was the score at halftime of that game, Stu?
You mean it was a close game. Georgia's offense, I mean,
Tennessee's offense was functioning.
They were functioning, and then Georgia shut them out in the second half. I don't have any doubts about Georgia's defense. Whether Stetson Bennett will be able to continue to do what he's, you know, continue to be the steady, take care of the ball, make some plays guy that he's been so far against a team like Alabama, we'll see. But Georgia's defense is Georgia. I mean, Aaron Suttles, our Alabama writer, said it. Georgia's defense is now what Alabama's defense used to look like. It is, you know, vintage Kirby Smart.
Can we make that proclamation a week from today? And not after they played Jarrett Guarantano or, you know, an Auburn offensive line that's entirely new. I think it's talented.
You have to manage your expectations, okay? And this is what I'm saying. Like, I have no doubts about Georgia's defense. But I also have zero doubts about Mac Jones, Najee Harris, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith. So it's quite possible that Alabama will go out and put up 40 points on that same defense this week. I don't know that that'll be an indictment of Georgia's defense. It's just there are some offenses in college football that are just too good to hold down to, you know, 13 points. If Georgia holds Alabama to under 20 points next week, they're basically call them the 85 Bears, because that's really hard to do.
Fair enough. I think, to me, the benchmark will be if you can hold Alabama under 30 points on offense, that is a huge statement, I think, about what you've got going there. And I think this will be a test like they haven't seen before. Now, they definitely shut down the Tennessee run game. I don't think Tennessee had a running play more than 6 yards or 8 yards, and that's saying something, because Tennessee does have a very good offensive line, and it's a big physical group. So there was that. So when you look at this as a whole, what do you make of Florida right now? Are you off the bandwagon? Are you thinking, I mean, how much is that fixable on their defense?
Well, see, they've struggled on defense every week. And granted, I mean, I think we got to tip our hat to Lane Kiffin. Ole Miss has done this every week. I mean, not to the extreme they did Saturday night, but he's clearly got, you know, he's got a top five national offense there. And is it fixable? Probably. Florida always has talent on that side of the ball, but we haven't seen it yet. And I think, you know, everybody rushed to say, oh, see, after the first week, oh, the gap's not what people thought it was between Georgia and Florida. Nah, I think the gap still is what people thought. Florida has obviously a fantastic quarterback. And I said this on Twitter yesterday. Kyle Pitts is got to be like the most dominant pass-catching tight end in a long, long time. I mean, I could go back possibly go all the way back to when Gronk was at Arizona. I'm sure I'm shorting somebody in there. He's unbelievable. But they don't have the elite defense. And I don't know, maybe in 2020 you don't need an elite defense. I certainly think that people are going to need to be careful about reading too much into any one week, because they're playing 10 conference games. You know, we know the Bruce Feldman body blow theory, right? Like some of these performances, how much do they have to just do with the fact that 3 weeks in, nobody's gotten to play a Sun Belt team or an FCS team. They just go from one talented team to the next. And is that playing into some of these missed tackles and blown assignments and just that it's hard to do that week after week after week?
No doubt. It's been an interesting time since the SEC has cranked up. I think that... Look, one of the things that really stood out watching this, and look, you know, Lane Kiffin took over at Ole Miss. He inherited some really good offensive players, no doubt, from what they had recruited on the previous staff. I think Jeff Lebby deserves credit because he's the one who's the primary play caller in this. And it's been very interesting just to see You know, look, they don't have much to work with on defense, right? So that game, you know, I watched a lot of their Florida game. This felt like they were even, you know, Corral had even more command of what was going on against a team with better players. So that's the thing that kind of was like, they're very entertaining. I mean, they're just a very entertaining team to watch. And that doesn't mean they're a top 10 team. I don't know where they're going to be. They got to get better players on defense. I assume Lane will probably hit the JUCO ranks to try to ramp that up more. But look, I mean, credit to him. I mean, I thought about this just from watching the game that, you know, we remember when he left to go to FAU and you were thinking, man, this could go really well or it could go really bad. And it went really well. And I think he has got something going there in Oxford. And I could see recruits really are going to buy in to that at this point, because when you look at the rest of the SEC, now who knows how much, you know, like, did yesterday at all with what Texas A&M did that change your feeling on whether Jimbo is going to be able to break through there or not?
So A&M is a perfect example of how do you possibly analyze these teams from week to week. They scored 17 points on Vandy the first week. Their offense did not look great against Alabama, though Kellen Mond had his moments. And then against Florida, they've got, you know, Isaiah Spiller ran for almost 200 yards. Caleb Chapman, who I've been hearing about for some time, but who hadn't really done anything yet, has a huge game, and they look good. And so does that mean that they are figuring it out, or that Florida's defense is just going to do that against a lot of people? It's hard. It's hard to make any definitive judgments from week to week. The only thing I know for sure is that Ole Miss's defense is as bad as it can possibly
get. It actually isn't
get.
As bad as it possibly can get, because there's a worse defense in the SEC right now, and it's a defense that has more individual talent than them, and that is the one that Bo Pelini now runs.
Can I give a quick Ole Miss defense stat, and then we will absolutely talk about the train wreck that's going on in Baton Rouge? This is from Roger Sherman of The Ringer. So Alabama had 11 drives last night, on which Ole Miss allowed 9 touchdowns. One of the 10th one ended on a fumble at the 1 yard line, and then they forced one punt at the 40. That means that Ole Miss only prevented 41 yards on the entire night. Alabama, if they had gained every possible yard they could have gained, would have gotten to 764, but instead they had to settle for 723. I mean, that's insane. That's as bad as it gets. But you want to make the case that LSU's is worse? I'm all ears.
I'm going to make the case that LSU's is certainly more disappointing. LSU has some better players. Now, Derek Stingley's played 2 games. One, he played well. Yesterday against Missouri was not something I'm sure he's going to want NFL scouts to see. You look at some of the individual talent they have, but right now, Bo Pelini has really struggled to make adjustments, and he seems lost. I mean, credit to Eli Drinkwitz. He had them off balance, and he did it with 3 of his better receivers not in the game, and a true freshman cornerback who is talented, but really went in there, and it looked like they were playing very carefree, where it looked like you just have receivers just running so wide open. I mean, here's the thing that, you know, and we'll throw out the Vandy game is weird in this regard, is LSU just drilled Vandy, and that's the same team that almost beat Texas A&M. So, I mean, they had one decent week, but then were horrible against the Mississippi State team that everybody else has been able to figure out except for the LSU defense. But, you know, for all the talk about Joe Burrow, no Joe Brady, no Clyde, no Ja'Marr Chase, LSU's offense has been good enough for them to win against these 3 opponents. It's been the defense that's the reason why they're 1-2, and they looked horrific. I mean, right now, Terrace Marshall has been an All-American. Miles Brennan has actually been, after the first shaky first half of holding the ball too long in the opener, he's been very good, I think. It's been the defense, and you're looking at it going, they didn't, you know, yeah, they lost some good players, especially the way Patrick Queen played by the end of the year, but it's just kind of puzzling to see how lost they are. And I'm interested to see what Pelini's answers are going to be in terms of the adjustments he makes, because now he's going to face an even tougher offense in Florida than anything he's seen before. So I don't know. Look, when you looked at a team that's going to have whatever it was, 15 or 17 new starters, I think there was going to be some rocky moments, but I did not expect the defense to be the reason why they are looking so shaky.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
There was going to be a drop off. I would never imagine this bad, and so it does seem logical that Bo Pelini, why you would think he and his scheme have been the problem. I think the interesting kind of subtext to all this, though, is that Coach O, he could have managed expectations in the offseason. He could have tried to say, "Hey, you know, this team is going to take a little bit of time. We lost so many guys." Quite the opposite. He actually said in the preseason, "Our defense right now is playing better than at any point last season," which some people took as a little bit of a shot at Dave Aranda, who, no, they did not have a dominant defense on the way to the national title last season. They dropped it off.
And you remember the old Miss game felt, you know, there was definitely, for a while, I think people were like, "Your defense isn't going to be good enough to win a national title. It's just your offense is so good." And that was the kind of the.
So it kind of, the narrative kind of went from Dave Aranda, highest paid DC in the country, we're so happy to have him, to, you know, it wasn't that great to begin with last year. Now we got Bo Pelini. We're switching up to 4-3. You know, wait till you see this. And it's just been abysmal. So did he make the wrong hire? Is it just they need more time to adapt to this new system? Is it just too much inexperience? I don't know, but I am scared for them to face Kyle Trask and that Florida offense this week, given how they've played against. I mean, Mississippi State, since that moment in the sun that first week where Leach and KJ Costello were the talk of the town, they've been so bad on offense the last 2 weeks that Leach actually benched Costello at one point against Kentucky. The final score of that game against Kentucky, 24-2. That's the offense that LSU gave up 623 passes.
By the way, Wazoo fans, not all of them, but probably some of them are looking after last night's post-game press conference with Mike, are probably going, "Yeah, you already got the full Leach experience in less than a month. You know, you had the great big upset win where everybody's raving about how revolutionary this system is and how it's going to do so much damage. And then there was an underwhelming performance in there. And then there was a completely inept performance. And then where it seems like Mike is calling out his players in the after, where he's talking about like purging malcontents."
So all of this SEC talk, this day where they, where the defense is seemingly got exposed, is interesting timing, because next week is Georgia Alabama, number two versus number three, the showdown that people have been waiting for, and I think that we're all gonna have. We'll save that talk for later in the week for our second episode. But man, my head is spinning a little bit about the possibilities for that game now after that Alabama Ole Miss game. But Alabama Ole Miss was not the only back and forth wild game on Saturday by any means.
No, to me, the most entertaining game we've had so far this season was Red River and Texas OU. And I got to be honest, when Texas is down two touchdowns with about 5 minutes left, you're like, all right, I've been here before with Sam Ehlinger recently as Texas Tech game a couple weeks ago. And I've certainly been here before with this Oklahoma defense. So then when they get it into overtime, Texas has all the momentum. You're thinking, okay, this is going to be the way that Sam Ellinger is going to end his Red River games against OU. Now, it's entirely possible they could meet again, in the Big 12 title game. But especially after Gabe Burkich, who's one of the best kickers in the country, who didn't miss a kick last year, misses a kick that Lincoln Riley set up, put on a tee for him, basically, on a second down attempt that would have won the game. And so you're thinking, there's no chance Oklahoma can win this now. And yet somehow the Sooners do, and another really crushing loss for Tom Herman.
It was one of those games where it really did feel like after once Texas mounted the comeback, this was their moment, right? Like they earned this. They fought their way back. Sam Ellinger, they're going to win this game now. And overtime, the four overtimes did not go well for Texas. And I got to give a lot of credit to Spencer Rattler. He has the back-to-back weeks, the killer interception. Then he has two straight turnovers in this game, and Lincoln Riley actually benches him. There was some thought at the time that he might be injured, but then Lincoln Riley told Jenny Taft, nope, he's available. And he did eventually bring him back in. And, you know, for a redshirt freshman who could easily have confidence problems right now, he came back and balled out in the overtime periods. And so I wonder if this is a bit of a – if this ends up being kind of a turning point moment for Oklahoma. They could have been 0-3 in the Big 12. They were very close to being 0-3 in the Big 12. They get the win, and you look at who they're going to be playing from here in the Big 12. I mean, it's possible they've already played the two best teams in the Big 12 because Iowa State, K-State look really good. I'm not going to write off Oklahoma State yet. But they could get on a little bit of a roll now, especially once they start getting some of those suspended players back. And I mean, they were down another running back in this game. Like they were down to basically TJ Pledger. If everybody had come back, that could have come back, he would have been the fourth or fifth string running back, and he was like their only guy.
Yeah, well, Marcus Major stepped up and did a nice job. He's a redshirt freshman who they had not seen at all. But yeah, TJ Pledger had his best game. I mean, they needed him to really produce, and he had been a pretty big recruit for them, and he hadn't really done much of anything. And yesterday, ran for over 120 yards. He ran hard. I thought he gave them a weapon and a stabilizing force when they really, really needed it. The thing when you look at Texas, and we talked about this situation a lot a week or two ago, but you're talking about a team that has 16 returning starters coming back, and Sam Ellinger, who's as experienced as any quarterback in the country. You and I both kind of have raved about his leadership skills and intangibles for a long time here. And then you just see this is a team that had 11 penalties. They've had, you know, they had all sorts of penalties before, and they couldn't run the football. I mean, Oklahoma got a lot of pressure on Ellinger. They shut down the run game. I mean, I don't know. It just was like, to me, Texas was in way more of a spot than OU. Because even if OU had started out 0-3 in the Big 12, after what Lincoln Riley's done there, you know, he's the guy. It's just a matter of, you know, how do they you know, boost their way out of it. If you're Texas, I don't know what you do right now in terms of if you're a Texas fan or if you're a Texas booster surveying the situation going, you know, this is what we are right now. And keep in mind, probably the next time you come to Red River, you're not going to have Sam Ellinger there. Like, you know, I know there's probably some fans out there who think Sam is overrated because he gets talked about so much and we talk about him a lot. But I watched that game yesterday and kept thinking, if they don't have Sam Ellinger, this team is like a 5-7 kind of team. And I know we don't have a 12-game season, but that's what Texas has felt like for the last couple of years. The only thing stopping them from being a non-bowl team is that quarterback. And he couldn't put it on his back for 60 minutes plus four overtimes. I mean, it just at some point, you know, it's just, you know, that I don't understand it, because it's like you have, you know, you talk about recruiting and stars a lot. This is a defense that has a lot of 4- and 5-star guys who came in there, and you just look at it going, man, they cannot get it done. They just don't look like, it's almost like all the evaluations were wrong.
I think the reason, first of all, there were some jokes yesterday about, remember, every player in the country theoretically could come back for another year. Like, oh, that wasn't his last Red River. He'll come back again next year. I think that the reason Sam Ehlinger gets criticized sometimes is not his, it's not, this is not his, it's not his fault that he is basically all they have. The entire, he, there's an expectation for them to win. He basically has to be like what Lamar Jackson was to Louisville or what Johnny Manziel was to A&M. I mean, the guy was 30 of 53 for 287 yards. He ran 23 times for 112 yards, but he had two interceptions, including a big one in overtime, and six sacks. He got sacked six times. And he gets no help whatsoever. Texas's running backs, Bijan Robinson, Keontae Ingram, Rashawn Johnson, combined for 29 rushing yards between three running backs. You're not going to win. You're not going to win big games that way. So I agree with you. I feel like right now Texas is stuck in the same place they've been for several years. And you can't really look to, oh, I mean, I guess if Bijan Robinson, he's a five-star freshman, if he like gets his groove and takes off here soon, that would certainly help the offense a lot. But
it's the offense, but you're talking about the offense. Yeah, the defense is horrific.
There's not a lot of guys that you can look to. Like A&M had some guys, you know, who were highly rated recruits who stepped up in a big way in that Florida game. We're still waiting for that from Texas. Haven't seen it yet.
Haven't seen any. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I think if you're a Texas fan, you're probably tired of holding your breath for that. I mean, just, you know, it just doesn't look like it's going to happen.
You know who's also, a team that is also kind of the same from year to year, but in a really good way? Clemson.
Yeah, it was a dominant showing they had at home against Miami on both sides of the ball. One thing that I feel like watching Clemson is because, and this is not at all intended as a knock on Trevor Lawrence, but because Trevor Lawrence has gotten so much attention from being so outstanding as a true freshman quarterback, is I think unless you watch Clemson a lot, I don't think people realize just how good Travis Etienne is as a weapon for them. And I mean, he was fantastic again last night.
Travis Etienne may go down as one of the most underappreciated stud running backs I can remember. I mean, he doesn't even really ever garner Heisman buzz because he plays on the same team as the preseason Heisman favorite. I don't think many of us even expected he would be back this year. I mean, I think it was, given that he plays the wear and tear position, and it was like, well, what else does he have to prove? He's been so good, and yet he came back for a senior season, and he has taken his game to even another level, especially the way they use him as a receiver. So, but to me, the story of that game was Clemson's defense. And it seems kind of silly now in hindsight that after Brennan Armstrong from Virginia had some success on them, that it was like, oh, well, maybe Clemson's defense isn't as good as usual, and D'Arc King can have a big game. They completely shut him down. And I was really impressed. I mean, obviously they have the freshman D linemen. Like, they got a lot going on, but I was really impressed.
Getting Tyler Davis back helped them a lot, too. I mean, he was the guy that I think Miami was most concerned about. Mm-hmm. And he had missed the last couple games with an MCL injury, and he was the one that they thought that's their best player, and he was definitely impactful. I thought what was the biggest mismatch for Miami on the negative side for them was Miami's receivers really struggled against Clemson's DBs, and if your guys can't win in those, even if you don't feel like you can have 50-50 ball situations, it just gets really, really congested for them. Like, think back to when we last saw Clemson's defense lit up. It was Joe Burrow, but it was really Ja'Marr Chase just fucking dominated them, right? And, you know, and Miami has definitely improved from where they were, I believe, but they don't have anybody on the outside who is, never mind an Andre Johnson. Right now, they don't have anybody who is a big, you know, win threat. They have good tight ends, but I'm talking about just outside guys. And if you don't have that against Clemson, I think it's going to be a really long day, because I think Brett Venables is too good at getting pressure where it just looks like he's playing with 12 guys against you.
This is why Brent Venables is so good. They changed things up from what they did the week before, and they dominated. And also, I mean, we just talked a little while ago about LSU losing all those guys to the NFL. What impressed me the most about Clemson was how well their DBs play. Like you said, I mean, there were some amazing plays, some amazing pass deflections and interceptions made by some guys who are very inexperienced. Deion Kendrick is basically their only starter back from last year's secondary. Sheridan Jones, Jalen Phillips, Landon Zanders, these are not guys you've really seen before from Clemson who are out there making huge plays in a huge primetime game. So yet again, it would appear, Clemson has reloaded on defense. They lose A.J. Terrell. They lose Tanner Mews. They lose Kayvon Wallace. And they come out and they played the way they did. They're the one team.
They also lost Mr. Simmons, who was like the guy who, you know, I think burying the lead on that one. But
no, yeah. I was focusing on the DBs, although he was considered a little bit of everything, obviously. Clemson is the one program that has never had. So we talked about Alabama earlier. I mean, there is a theory that out there that you can't have both the high octane offense and a dominant defense, that once you play that style in practice, your defense is going to suffer. Clemson is the one program that's never happened. They have Deshaun Watson. They have Trevor Lawrence. They have Travis Etienne. They score a lot of points. And they're a dominant defense. And credit to – that's why I think it's a big credit to Brent Venables on that one. I mean, most DCs have just kind of – you talk to Dave Aranda or – I mean, you name any seasoned DC. They're like, yeah, I mean – It's different now. You can't hold teams to 17 points. Brent Venables, F that. He's gonna try to shut you down. And yeah, so Joe Burrow. So they couldn't do it against Joe Burrow. Nobody else could either. I will be interested to see if anybody in the ACC can challenge them, because I do think there is one team in the ACC that has the makings of an offense like that, and it's the North Carolina Tar Heels, who beat Virginia Tech 56-45, but they
gave them
not
a good game last year, right?
Came right down to the wire, and that was probably when, I mean, that was a very low-scoring game when UNC was, you know, in the very early stages of figuring this out. Now, they are not on their schedule, so it would have to be that ends up being the ACC championship matchup. I mean, I think the one real test for Clemson the rest of the way will be they play at Notre Dame on November 7th, the same date that game was going to be played originally. Hard to read too much into a game against Florida State, who is so bad, but their running backs continue to, Kyren Williams and Chris Tyree continue to put on a show. So I think those are the two. Those are the two teams left that would have any shot of slowing them down in the ACC.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army Knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Let's get to the mailbag. As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. And this first one from Ryan Gentry of Charlotte touches on one of the controversial, if not the most controversial, moment of Saturday's games in the Auburn-Arkansas game. Hey, Stu and Bruce, when a ref blows the whistle early on a fumble, why do they not do a better job of giving the possession to the team who recovered the fumble? Bo Nix clearly spiked the ball backwards for a fumble, and Arkansas made a clear recovery, yet the whistle was blown and Auburn kept the ball for the game-winning field goal. So the SEC, in an attempt to be transparent, actually put out a statement about it Saturday night, Bruce, and I don't think it made anybody feel any better. Basically, the reason Arkansas didn't get to keep the ball was because they didn't recover it quickly enough. There's that subject of immediate recovery. That being said, the reason they probably didn't recover it quickly enough is because they blew the play dead. And that, I think, is what's frustrating everybody. Why did they blow that play dead so quickly when, as it would clearly, obviously turn out, that should have been a live ball?
Very puzzling, and I'm sure very frustrating, because if you're an Arkansas fan, I think you gotta, big picture wise, feel very good about how Sam Pittman's tenure has started off here. This outcome notwithstanding, because I think you're looking at it going, we're on to something here, you know. But at the same time, it's like you want more to show for it, because you know you're going to go up against, you know, some rough SEC West opponents coming up soon too.
Now, there's a second part of this question. Is Auburn the luckiest football team of all time? The kick six, the prayer at Jordan Hare, the Michael Dyer touchdown when people thought he might have been down in the national championship, interceptions on the 1 yard line versus Kentucky and Alabama. I'm sure there's more. It does seem like there's something about Auburn, and especially when they play at home, where just weird stuff always falls in their favor.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. Auburn is wildly unpredictable, and this just goes along with the charm of Auburn, I guess. I don't know. I hadn't really thought of it when you mentioned the Michael Dyer thing, and I was like, yeah, that kind of is in line with it. Obviously, you know, I thought about a little of the kick six yesterday, because it came up at one point when the Clemson game. Dabo's going to try a 61-yard field goal, and you see Bubba Bolden back in the end zone waiting for it. And then they block the kick, and somebody else, you know, just goes right to the wing, who just runs it in for a touchdown that way. And it's like, you know, to be able to have pulled it off. Like, I mean, sometimes some of those things, I think, really are also good preparation that went into those situations. But yes.
Speaking of Miami, Evan from Charlotte. In Bruce's article on Miami's offensive reinvention, he referenced the success of Rhett Lashley simplifying the system. It seems you often hear about a new coach on either side of the ball having success by implementing a simpler playbook. I've rarely heard players rave about how a new system is more complex. Who are the coaches out there known for successfully running complicated systems on either offense or defense? It's a good question. It always seems like, oh, we just simplified things and made it better, which makes you wonder why it was so complicated to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of the success Leach has had is because he can run very few plays and still make it work. You know, it seemed like at times some of the stuff that you would see, you know, from that Boise State system with a lot of motions and shifts and trades. And I think it's what may look complicated, but to the players is still digestible, I think, is the key. You know, one thing I had heard, and I could ask the Brady Quinn himself on this, but one of the challenges I heard when Charlie Weiss came back from the NFL to be the Notre Dame head coach was he was putting a lot on his guys to learn, and it was almost like different game plans that were significantly hefty from week to week, and some guys can handle it and some guys can't handle it, and so I think that's where it gets to be a lot. Now, I had heard that you know, Navy's defensive coordinator came in from Kennesaw State, and would put a lot on those guys, and those guys could really handle it. And I think that there are times where Dave Aranda, if you look at what he did when he was at Wisconsin, would put a lot on his guys, and they were able to handle it. And so I think it's a manager. You know, I remember Aranda talking about some of the gym rat guys he's had at certain places where it's just like they can, I don't want to say get into the weeds of it, but I think that becomes a real asset. But I think the thing you hear a lot from coaches is going, and I thought Rhett Lashley really articulated this well as Garen Justice, the line coach, was rarely do you come out of a game and go, and we didn't run enough plays, we just didn't execute. I mean, that's really the thing. And it's where it comes back to mental busts and things like that. And I think that's the hard balance. But you usually hear from coaches, it's a temptation that guys, offensive guys, always want to put a little more in. And it's almost like, because I don't know if it's ego or if it's insecurity or whatever those things are, but that's something that comes up a lot in a lot of postmortems.
I think that the Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, like that coaching tree, their defenses are very complicated. Lots of, from everything you hear, I mean, they are NFL, you know, he's an NFL disciple. They are NFL style defenses where they are hyper focused on the opponent's tendencies. And they have, I mean, I think they have a lot of like very, very specialty packages given on depending on down and distance. And obviously, for the most part, that has always worked. I think the challenge in defending today's offenses is that they move so fast. I mean, basically, the RPO is the great neutralizer. You can study tendencies all you want. You can come up with the most complicated defensive play scheme imaginable. Basically, the RPO is just a guessing game. Are they going to run or are they going to pass? So I think that more and more, if they haven't already, defensive coaches are going to have to make things more simplistic. And then on offense, I think it's actually pretty rare now. I mean, basically, pro-style systems are more complex. In fact, KJ Costello articulated this when I interviewed him before the season, going from Stanford, where he described it as like football school. The amount of detail, the amount of preparation that goes into learning that playbook versus Mississippi State being the simplest thing of all. There just aren't that many traditional pro-style offenses left in college football. Most teams are now running a much simpler spread, kind of. Even LSU last year, Joe Brady, you know, that was an NFL influence, bringing that in from the Saints, but that didn't mean it was complicated. You know, if anything, it was a small number of plays and formations that they focused on during the week based on what the opponent was bringing them. So interesting that that's the trend it's moving in. Hey, well, how about a question about a conference that's not yet playing, Bruce?
So it's either the Big Ten, the MAC, the Mountain West, or the Pac-12?
Yeah, it's our friend David Eisen, frequent podcast emailer, and we know he's a USC fan. Hey, guys, I'm anxious for your opinions on the following. When the Pac-12 opted not to have USC play Oregon in the shortened regular season, was this one, smart scheduling to increase the chances the conference has a team in the playoffs, or two, since the playoffs are a pipe dream, a missed opportunity to showcase a good regular season game and have additional national eyeballs?
I just think there was limited at that point, but you know, maybe this is a chance to say, hey, you know what, we're going to see it. These are the two favorites, and if it comes to that, I think there would be a lot of people who would want to see them play in a conference title game for the first time.
Yeah, I think that the SEC definitely did that with Georgia and Alabama when they had to add additional games, the two additional games. They wanted to make sure they would make it through with as few losses as possible. And I think if you're going to have any chance, if Pac-12 is going to have any chance of putting a team in the playoff, it's going to have to be an undefeated team. And if you think, and it's not set, and it's not written anywhere that SC and Oregon are definitely the two best teams, but that's what the rankings say, you know, I think you would want to give them the best possible shot of going undefeated. Now, the Pac-12 will say that it had nothing to do with that, and it had to do with the rotation of cross-divisional opponents and not wanting to mess up future year schedules and et cetera, et cetera. But come on. you can't tell me that's not on whoever the schedule maker's mind is. So to answer his question, I do think it was smart in terms of if there's any chance. It's not like they're going to be able to say, oh, we beat, you know, we played such a tough schedule. I mean, nobody's going to really know in a 7-game season. So the most important thing, probably the only thing that will matter, is if the team doesn't lose a game. As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.